that's all right with you.
All right. So,
Upbuck was a part of my language, but it was a shit show. And it exposed how weak the ARVN was.
Sure, they had American uniforms, American helmets. They had little American symbols, you know, for the officer corps, and they had the divisions. Everything was an Americanized. But the ARVN leadership, the soldiers, were it. Just not effective. And as Van learned, to his chagrin, when push came to shove, the American officers that were there as advisors could only advise. The Vietnamese would not listen to commands. Plus, the Vietnamese didn't speak English, and the Americans didn't speak Vietnamese. So if there was any communication, it had to happen through interpreters.
And most of the interpreters were not trustworthy.
Or they were incompetent. So, it was a failure by every measure.
But how did America report it?
Well, the story began on January 3rd, the very next day, when Western journalists, David Halberstam, who worked for the New York Times, he's the tall guy with the thick glasses on the left. In the middle, smoking the cigarette, that's Malcolm Brown. He worked for the Associated Press. And on the right, that's Neil Sheenan of UPI, the United Press International. These reporters are the ones, and if you pay attention to the news, even if you get like a report like from the Boston Globe, you read the story and it will say from the AP. So these are the guys that wrote the stories and they basically sold them to, that were distributed to all of the media outlets in the United States. So they go and they walk around the battlefield with General York, General Robert York. And at some point during this little press tour, Neil Sheehan actually asked the general, "Well, General, there's helicopters that are shot down. There's a blown up armored personnel carrier. I mean, there's craters everywhere. What happened?" The general apparently replied, "What the hell does it look like? They got away. That's what happened." So, based on that, the New York Times, the LA Times, the Chicago Tribune, and all of the other major newspapers in our country reported the Battle of Apak as a major defeat in which the communist guerrillas managed to shoot down a fleet of American helicopters carrying Vietnamese troops into battle. The truth. In the Washington Post, Sheenan's story read, "Angry U.S. military advisors charged today that the Vietnamese infantrymen refused direct orders to advance during Wednesday's battle at Ap Bac, and that American Army captain was killed while out front pleading with them to attack." The truth. Do you guys know anything about the media and how the government actually controls the media in our country? Do you think the government wants the truth being reported to the American people? It was scandalous, shocking. So much so, General York got recalled, got pulled out of Vietnam for allowing this story to get into the American press. But that's not where the hilarity ends, because 18 hours after the press left the battlefield, 2 days after the battle actually took place, the ARVN finally moves the artillery in, the big cannons, and opens fire and blows up all of the places where the Viet Cong had been. If you're gonna use artillery, you shoot the big guns when the bad guy is there. Because what effect does it have on the bad guys 2 days later when they're about gone? Well, the funny thing is they actually did kill people. They didn't really know how to use the cannons that efficiently. 5 ARVN soldiers would be killed and another 14 would be wounded. So literally, they blew themselves up. Van and other advisors knew right then not only how bad the battle went, but they predicted the inevitable. In his report, Van summed it up as follows, and I quote, "It was a miserable damn performance, just like it always is. These people won't listen. They made the same mistake over and over again in the same way. They will never learn." How can you win a war if the soldiers don't fight? But the President of the United States did not get Van's report. Van's report would not become public knowledge until he was called before Congress in 1973, a decade later. What the President got for a report came from General Harkins, the head of MACV. He told the President in his report that the Battle of Ap Bok was a success. Why? Well, the VC withdrew. And the ARVN took the hamlet. He noted that the ARVN forces, yes, they did make a number of errors, but he characterized them largely as errors of courage rather than errors of cowardice. And I quote, "It took a lot of guts on the part of those pilots and crew to go back into an area to try to rescue their pals. Like any engagement in war, there are days and there are days. This day, they got a bear by the tail and they didn't let it go. At least they got most of it." This would be the fatal flaw of the American military mindset going into Vietnam. In Harkin's mind, this was a World War II battle. The Americans in green entered the field and they drove the Germans in gray back. A conventional attack resulting in control of the opponent's territory. But were the VC actually holding the territory? Or were they there waiting for the Americans to come? Well, it turned out the VC had no interest in Ap Bok. They just wanted to have a fight against the ARVN because they had been studying and they wanted to see if what they perceived to be weaknesses were true. It wasn't about controlling territory, it was about being able to beat the ARVN. And that's exactly what happened. Harkins, World War II guy, he lacked curiosity to ask questions. He didn't actually analyze what took place. Plus, to make matters worse, he wasn't part of the press tour. York was in charge of it. Harkins wrote his report from his office in Saigon. So, he didn't go out and see the battlefield. He also didn't question the ARVN reports, because the ARVN reports had a much higher VC death count than their side, even though Van's report said otherwise.
Why? Well, Harkin's fatal flaw, he trusted DM more than his own American men.
So,
this could have been the point when America learned enough not to become entangled in this war, greater than they already were.
But they did not heed the lessons of the battle.
Ironically, this will be the last we say about Harkins for a bit.
He also, in his report to Kennedy, calculated that the ARVN had enough strength to actually invade North Vietnam. And he argued that by January 1963, at the latest, January 1964 at the latest, that they could possibly begin invading North Vietnam. And it would only take 1 to 3 years. And they could conquer North Vietnam. So, at the same time, he's telling President Kennedy, we're gonna win. He also starts drawing up plans to start pulling American soldiers out by 1965, when he estimated that the tide would turn completely.
That, my friends, is called hubris. Questions?
Why were the ARVN so reluctant to fight? Obviously, there's a language barrier, but why, I know so they couldn't understand the directions, but why didn't they want to fight just on their own?
All right, question for you. How can I give you a situation that you would understand? All right, so you, if you were Vietnamese, probably would be Buddhist, okay? You got a government that's controlled by a dictator who's Catholic. The reason why you're in the army is not because you volunteered, it's because you're drafted. And people are trying to kill you with guns.
Got it.
Yeah.
So basically, you can't fault them because they didn't care. For them, it wasn't a war against the communists. You know, this global struggle between the free world and the red Russians. To them, it was just, okay, they're the same people as we are. They speak the same language as us. And they want our peasants to have better lives. And I'm forced to be on this thing wearing this uniform. Why do I want to die for this cause?
Especially with an American yelling at me?
What's that?
All right. One other little nugget, then we'll call it a day.
Well, not only was Ap Bok an embarrassment from Diem, but the Diem regime itself was getting into trouble. By early 1963, all around the RVN, protests started erupting. Not big riots, but just gatherings. Peasants, urban city dwellers, even some ARVN officers were not happy with what was going on. And if you read the local papers, there were stories of corruption. There were stories of repression. There were stories of incompetency. And most of the locals pretty much blamed his family. The cabal that had all control over everything. Because the oligarchy was ruling for themselves, not the folks. So, as the ability of the regime to control the people weakened because more and more and more people are not happy with it, instead of implementing reforms, Diaminu retreat. They pull back into the palace. They ordered more and more guards protecting them. They stop going out into public. And they didn't listen. Why? Well, Diem had always been what some Americans, particularly Ambassador Henry Cabot Lodge, referred to him as a monologuist. Monologuist is someone who speaks to hear themselves talk. So, if he has a subordinate, he talks down to them. He doesn't ask them what's going on. He doesn't, like, try to get their input. He tells them what has to be done. And he does the same to American officials. There are many, many stories of him just being in the palace in an office and him just talking for hours and hours, ignoring any attempt from someone just trying to interrupt, trying to interject, ask a question. Why? He was convinced he knew it all. So he was trying to educate. Oh, and he never had an interview with a reporter. Never once spoke with any reporters. Because if you speak with a reporter, what are the reporters going to do?
Ask questions.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, his brother knew was the same. So as a result, the brothers began looking for any potential threat to their regime. And one thing they got wind of were those reporters. Those damn American reporters that were taking pictures and writing stories and reporting upon what was going on in South Vietnam. Brown, Hammersham, Sheehan. These guys were viewed as terrorists because they were reporting the truth. And to make matters even more frustrating for the regime, they would be allowed to embed themselves in ARVN units. So they went out in the countryside and they saw what was actually going on with their own eyes. A lot of the pictures that I use are pictures that are taken by these guys or their crews. And guess what they would do when they were out in the country? Talk to people. Ask questions. They knew more about Vietnam than the president did. And one of the things they noticed and started reporting on was after Ap Bach, no more fluffy, nice stories about Diem. More and more, the administration was being blamed. And you could see it. What was being printed in the American newspapers was always different than the official reports by the regime. Again, the death tally at Ap Bach. According to the Diem regime, the VC suffered 500 deaths. Well, according to the American body count, what did I tell you? I lost track. I forget. Let me find it. It's in here somewhere. 18. That's a big discrepancy, no? Why does the government lie? Well, the government's trying to maintain its control. But then something happened in country that literally blew up in Diem's face. Known as the Buddhist crisis of 1963.
As I said to Dill, not saying which one, the majority of the population of the Republic of Vietnam were Buddhists. But they were ruled over by 10% of the population, who were Catholic. The majority despised the Catholics because they linked the Catholics to the French. And we already covered how the French treated the people in Vietnam. Not so good. And to make matters worse, the only way to go up the socioeconomic ladder in the Republic of Vietnam was to be Catholic. Catholics in the military were the only ones who became high-ranking officers. Catholics in the government were the only one who could become department heads, would get promotions, get raises. Catholics would also get access to the best land. Catholics would get business deals. Catholics would get tax cuts. It got so bad that many of the junior officers in the ARVN pretended to convert to Catholicism so they could get opportunities and promotions. Even more egregious, villages that had a Catholic church got guns from the government so it could defend itself against the VC. There are stories of some Buddhist villages pretending to convert in mass. Everybody suddenly becomes a Catholic just so they could get government aid. So times were not good. Times were not equitable, fair in any way, shape, or form. We'll call it like a powder keg. Getting ready to go. And then something weird happened. Back in 1958, the regime passed a law known as Decree Number 10. This law prohibited the display of religious flags. But from 1958 all the way up until 1963, the law was never enforced. Until May 7th, 1963. Vesak. Celebrated on May 8th, is one of the most important religious festivals in Buddhist countries. Vesak is the birthday of the Buddha. So, on Vesak, the entire village comes out. They decorate their homes with flags and tapestries and other type of Buddhist symbols. And then they gather together and they unleash, you know, the flaming lanterns. And then the community gathers and they have a meal and they celebrate. Well, on May 7th, the day before Vesak, the Diem administration announces it's going to enforce Decree Number 10. No Buddhist is allowed to display any type of Buddhist flags. Which, of course,
causes outrage amongst the majority population of the country. Fueling the agitation was hypocrisy. Because just 3 days before, all around Saigon, Catholic flags were posted celebrating. Oh, where'd he go? Oh, I screwed up the animation. Celebrating the 5th anniversary of Diem's older brother, Ngo Dinh Thuc, who was the Catholic Archbishop of Vietnam. So, all around Saigon, the Catholics displayed Vatican flags, symbols of the crucifix. But wait, if there's no flags, how can you have the Catholic flags, but not the Buddhist flags? Well, on Vesak, 3,000 Buddhists start a protest in Hue, the traditional imperial capital, and they begin taking to the streets. Soon, joining these 3,000 monks are kids who were part of the South Vietnamese version of the Boy Scouts, schoolgirls, and just residents, angry over the fact that they cannot fully celebrate the birthday of the Buddha. Well, as they marched around the street in protests, tensions began to rise, and eventually the ARVN and police were called in to disperse the crowds. When the crowds didn't go back like they were told, the police and the soldiers actually opened up open fire. They started shooting into the crowd. They threw grenades. 9 were killed. 4 were seriously injured. If you know anything about Buddhists, they're pacifists. In response to this regime oppression, one of the leading Buddhist monks in the country, Thich Trai Quang, would issue what was known as the Manifesto of the Monks. This was a list of 5 demands. And none of them sound that outrageous. 1, freedom to fly the Buddhist flags. 2, religious equality. 3, compensation for the families of the dead. 4, no more arbitrary punishments against Buddhists. 5, accountability. Whoever gave the command to the soldiers to shoot the people, they need to be punished. Well, the manifest was uttered. You can see there this picture. I think this was one of Brown's pictures. He actually has a press release. There are reporters there. There's a microphone from CBS. This story would span the globe, as would the response from the regime. Even though Diem had been micromanaging the country since 1956, I don't know what happened. It's not the government's fault. We didn't do this. It must be the VC. Because after all, it's the VC that is stirring things up. right? The VC of the boogeyman. The VC is gonna catch you. And in the end, he refused to make any concessions. No equality, no payment to the dead, no ending of arbitrary government aggression, arrests, and so forth. Well, the people really began taking to the streets, and he said, fine, 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 fine. In the very last hour, he said, fine. We'll give the family members compensation. He actually went into the American bank account that America had been giving him and pulled out $7,000 U.S. cash and promised to give $7,000 to each of the 9 families. Was this good enough? No. May 30th. 500 monks would demonstrate in front of the government center itself, the National Assembly building. This gathering attracted the attention of thousands of people in the city. Now, interestingly enough, it was illegal to gather in public in Saigon. But the monks were clever. They managed to avoid attention by hiring buses. They had 4 buses, and all of the monks, you know, packed in like a clown car, packed into the buses. So on the day in question, the buses drive into the city with the blinds closed, so you can't see that it's full of monks. And the caravan was timed to arrive right at noon. So the buses pull in. And by the way, the Vietnamese typically take lunch breaks that last an hour. It's a cultural thing. So what they do is when it's lunchtime, they actually go home. So the monks knew that at noontime, there would be few, if any, police in front of the government building because they're all going for lunch. So they arrive a little bit after noon, they all get off the bus, and they start their protest. It was the first open anti-Diem protest in Saigon ever. They unfurled their banners, and they sat for 4 hours, disrupting the flow of traffic in front of the government buildings. Then, when the police started showing up en masse, they got back on the buses and they drove back to their pagodas. It was all captured on film. Simultaneously, the patriarch, the head monk, Thich Nhat Hanh, announced he was going to begin a 48-hour hunger strike. And he encouraged all Buddhists to join him. Again, as a sign of protest against the regime. Well, I don't know if you've ever engaged in a hunger strike. But after 2 days of not eating, you probably become very hangry. And it's no coincidence that the day that the hunger strike ended across the nation in Saigon and other cities, nationwide protests began to erupt. And during these protests, something horrific happened. In Hue, the formal center of Buddhism is the Tudam Pagoda.
1,500 protesters attempted to march to the Podgorica for a rally. But these 1,500 protesters were intercepted by ARVN armored personnel units. Instead of allowing the people to get to the Podgorica, they began launching six waves of tear gas, and they unleashed attack dogs. But the crowd refused to disperse. But among the protesters, 67 Buddhists were hospitalized for chemical injuries. Because I am guessing none of you have ever been around tear gas. Burns your eyes. If you inhale it, it burns your lungs. And the cans are supercharged. So what some of the Buddhists would do is when the tear gas canisters came in, they tried picking it up and throwing it away, only touching this flaming can, basically burning, second degree burns over their hands and arms. Well, the United States gets wind of this, and they send word to Diem quietly. If you continue to do this to Buddhists, we're going to cut off aid. Just like Trump did with Zelensky the other day. Well, the moment his piggy bank is threatened, Diem backs down and he responds to the United States' private threats by holding formal talks with Buddhist leaders. He would actually form a committee in which they would try to negotiate with the Buddhists and try to find commonality. But the goal was not to make equality. Diem's goal was just to stop the protests. Because if he could stop the protests, pictures would stop being taken and printed in American newspapers. But he played the game. On June 7th, he would issue a public statement announcing that, in a quote, some of the tensions are due to his officials lacking sufficient comprehension and sensitivity. But he did not admit personal fault for anything. Even though there's no way any of these police would do anything without his direct order. It's always someone else's fault. Well, then it happened. On June 11th, Thich Quang Duc would take action. And by the way, what he did was captured by Malcolm Brown. Early in the morning, Thich Quang Duc, along with other members of his monastery, would proceed towards the center of Saigon. Then, in the main intersection, in front of Diem's palace, another monk would pour gasoline on him that was carried in the car that was in front of the procession. He then lit himself on fire. And by the way, according to Malcolm Brown, he didn't even groan. He just sat there
until his body was completely engulfed. Until he died. And it wasn't just captured with still pictures.
I should rip this video and put it on my whole web base. So I don't have to do this again. I understand. I'm an adult. Watch it give me a porn commercial like that last one the other day. Now, it is said that when Madam knew, Brother New's wife, learned about what happened, she supposedly said, and I quote, "Let them burn, and we shall clap our hands."
If the Buddhists wish to have another barbecue, I will be glad to supply the gasoline in a match. But when you have one of the leading priests willing to set himself on fire in a nation where his faith was representative of 90% of the population, this was a huge problem. Soon, Vietnamese of all classes, even high school and university students, began joining anti-government demonstrations. And again, the American reporters were there, and they captured it all. Even those who were not devout Buddhists, they joined to the Buddhist cause. Why? Because if Diem could do it to the Buddhists, what's going to stop them from doing it from everybody else? I mean, these are monks, holy men. Well, this uprising caused not only confusion, but also concern to the administration and Kennedy's inner circle. According to transcripts that survived, when the Buddhist crisis started, Kennedy reportedly asked, "Who are these people? Who are these Buddhists? And why don't we didn't know about them before?" So the U.S. officials in the Republic of Vietnam soon began tripping over themselves to learn about the religion, and they're trying to figure out the Vietnamese culture, and they're trying to figure out if these Buddhist protests are actually significant. And is Diem to blame? Well, the administration was split. McNamara and LBJ told Kennedy, "There's nobody else. We're stuck with Diem. There's no alternative." But the State Department finally started bombarding Kennedy's inboxes, reports claiming that Diem was useless and arguing that the admin should kind of encourage a coup. It's time to remove him and put somebody else in place. But Kennedy didn't know what to do. He wanted to get tougher on Diem. He wanted to force the regime to clean up its act. But Kennedy didn't necessarily want to overthrow him, because you know what happens when you do regime change? You get stuck with the mess. So Kennedy then did something extraordinary. And he did something that very few political leaders do. He decided to tap somebody who had no political agenda and had no interest in basically blowing smoke up the president's behind. He selected Henry Cabot Lodge Jr. to become the next U.S. ambassador to Vietnam. Now, I know you don't learn about American history, so I'm sure you have no idea who the heck Henry Cabot Lodge was. Well, he was a leading Republican in the post-World War II era. He had been a senator from Massachusetts back when Massachusetts used to elect Republicans. And he served beginning in 1936. But he paused his political career and enlisted in the Army during World War II. He served two tours in Europe. And then when the war came to an end in 1946, he ran for office, was reelected, and became senator from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts again. But in 1952, Cabot's up for re-election, and he lost to none other than John Fitzgerald Kennedy, a Democrat. They were not friends by any means. And coincidentally, Lodge had been Nixon's running mate in the presidential election of 1960. So Kennedy picks Lodge not because they're buddies, but rather because they're opponents. And he knows that if Lodge sees something, he's got nothing to lose. He will tell the president the truth. So Lodge gets on a plane, flies over to Vietnam, starts meeting with American personnel and Vietnamese personnel in country. And literally in his first report to the president, he states that we're going to lose in Vietnam if Diem stays as president. So it's Lodge who begins basically encouraging Kennedy, we got to cool him, we got to cool him, we got to cool him. So this is where we're going to leave it. Diem is in quite a predicament. His people are outraged and rising up against him. The ambassador to the United States hates him. And the president is contemplating a coup. But would the president make the call? Well, we're going to have to see what transpires when we come back after break. So we're going to basically cover the couple of incidents that basically put Kennedy over the edge. Then we're going to see about the fall of Diem. And then on that first class after break, we're also going to see what happened to Kennedy. Real brief. Questions? Well, the whole whopping three of you, I'm going to give you the same message that I gave to my other classes. Three-part message. Part number one, if you actually go somewhere and have fun, have fun, right? If you go somewhere like on spring break, actually enjoy yourself. If you end up going home, make sure you give mom and dad a hug. Tell them you love them. And three, if you got time, work on your paper. You can still get extra credit if you get it done during break. Just saying. We'll see you. Have a good break.
No, thank you.